Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Three and Out podcast. I'm Kyle Reams. Today I'm here with Jade of Pant.
What's up, guys?
Alex Amster.
How's it going?
We're going to be beginning with a quick mock draft. Top 10 picks. Here's Amster starting it off.
Okay, so first overall pick, Arizona Cardinals. I have them taking Nick Bosa, defensive end out of Ohio State. Now, Nick Bosa, it's interesting. Obviously, little brother Joey Bosa and his father got drafted in the first round as well. He is an explosive pass rusher, and if he's anything of what Joey Bosa was, he's definitely deserved of the first overall pick. And he's had trouble staying on the field, but he should be healthy now. Explosive pass rusher, no-brainer for the Cardinals.
And as the number two pick for the San Francisco 49ers, it's coming down to probably Josh Allen or Quinnen Williams. I'm going with Josh Allen for them. He's more of an edge rusher. They already have a lot of interior defensive linemen, and the talent that Josh Allen has out of Kentucky, he's a great pass rusher. He can get around blockers, and I think he's really going to be a great help for this young Niners defense.
With the third overall pick to the New York Jets, I think they take a future left tackle who can play right tackle immediately, Jonah Williams, out of Alabama. Now, he's had great footwork, and he doesn't have the arm length that's desirable for an offensive tackle, but he makes up for that with his fast footwork, and he's faced a lot of great SEC talent. So I'd say he's definitely NFL ready. He comes in immediately and helps protect your franchise and Sam Darnold.
And then number four pick, I have the Raiders taking another Alabama player, Quinnen Williams, defensive tackle. This defense really has holes all over the field to plug. I mean, they could really take anyone here, and it would be an upgrade. I think Quinnen Williams is the best available player for them, so I think that's the pick that John Gruden should make.
All right, now number five to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I have cornerback Greedy Williams.
Their favorite.
Yeah, first of all, a great cornerback name, Greedy. But this guy is greedy. He's great. He's long. He's lean. He's great in press. And overall, he's the lockdown corner, something that the Bucs need. And, you know, I think with their revamped defense under Todd Bowles, he could be that Patrick Peterson-type mold. And he's a young, talented player who can lock down Julio Jones and tough receivers in that division.
And then number six, I might let Amster take this one, but I'm going to do it for him. New York Giants taking Dwayne Haskins, Ohio State. He's the best quarterback in this class, and I mean, the Giants, they need a quarterback. Eli Manning is not going to be getting it done for them in the future, and Dwayne Haskins, far and away the best QB in this class, and he's an immediate upgrade if they start him right away. He can sit for a year and learn. I just think that it would be really dumb for the Giants to pass up on this quarterback right here, right now.
And next, the Jacksonville Jaguars with the 7th overall pick. I have them taking Cody Ford. He can play tackle or guard from Oklahoma. And really, he's solidified his time in Oklahoma, solidified that line. He's protected Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and really, Oklahoma's had the best offensive line in college football for a while now. And he's been a part of that. I just think he's a great player. He has great hands. He's a mauler, and he's really aggressive at the line of scrimmage. Perfect fit for that Jaguars run game.
And then 8 to the Detroit Lions, I have Devin White out of LSU. The Lions do not have a great defense, and Devin White is a perfect fit for a Matt Patricia-led team. He's good all over the field, locked down in the middle, a great all-around player.
All right, number 9 to the Buffalo Bills, I have Rashawn Gary, defensive end from Michigan. You know, this is a stacked defensive end class, and that's the only reason Rashawn Gary should be slipping to number 9. He's an athlete right now, not a football player. That was quoted by Todd McShay. But this guy was the number one overall recruit coming out of high school. He has freakish athleticism at 6'6", 283. He's a menace. He can be that Khalil Mack type player if he can develop well. And I think Buffalo's the perfect fit. They have time to develop him, and that's their star on defense.
And then the number 10 pick, I'm going to go a little bit out of the box here. I'm going to say that the Broncos take Kyler Murray at number 10. I mean, they need a quarterback, and Elway has a history of taking big risks here. And then also not taking big risks. He's all over the place with his quarterback, and I think they're desperate. Elway needs to find someone to save his job, and I think Kyler Murray is an explosive prospect, one who is a little bit of a hit or miss guy, and I think if they hit with him, he can completely change this franchise. And that's going to do it for our first top 10 mock draft. And now we will be on to some college football here on the E3 and Out podcast. Just a little look into the QB transfer market that has just been going on. Starting off, we have the big news, Jalen Hurts to Oklahoma.
I mean, I said that earlier before. Like, if you remember on the last podcast, I said, you know what, Jalen Hurts to Oklahoma is definitely a possibility. Obviously, they have Spencer Rattler, but I think they decided that he's just too young to start immediately. Now I think he has the talent, like Trevor Lawrence, to immediately make an impact. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, obviously, Lincoln Riley is a great QB coach. He's shown that he can really turn around some good QBs. And, I mean, Kyler and Baker back-to-back years, I think this is a perfect situation for Jalen Hurts. I mean, he's also become, by just doing what he did, one of the most well-liked players in the nation.
I think he's going to have the respect of that entire team. Mm-hmm. To sit out a year for a better quarterback, just to have – it's called the ultimate sacrifice, mm-hmm. right? And this is his fifth year. He has all the experience. The guy's been to two national championship games, and I think – you know, earlier I said that I thought Texas would run away with the Big 12 next year. It's going to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a way better conference next year. That game is going to be amazing because the teams are obviously more evenly matched.
And I think that another big aspect of this move for Hurts is that – or the move for Oklahoma is that Hurts kind of smooths the transition to Rattler. In that – I mean, yeah, this is going to be Hurts' only year. He's fifth-year senior. But it really does help, like, kind of – go from Kyler Murray, who's like a electric QB, to Jalen Hurts, who's more of a
sound game manager. Yeah.
And then you get to transfer, or then you get to move on to Spencer Rattler, and you get to have like you another year of a good quarterback. You get more people, another good year, and you can help Spencer Rattler develop. And I mean, we saw Tua; he's great, and he also had effectively a year to develop under Jalen Hurts, and I think he's shown that he's a good mentor.
Yeah, I definitely think that it'll be interesting because, you know, Spencer Rattler definitely plays more like Kyler Murray, for sure. And I think this is going to be, honestly, like, based off the quarterbacks Lincoln Riley has had, this is his toughest coaching challenge yet. He's got to change up his offense into a more running-based, game-manager-type offense. Jalen right. Hurts doesn't have the arm.
But I think Jalen Hurts is objectively a more coachable player.
For then, sure.
I mean, he's probably the most coachable player in college football. I mean, he seems like he's really willing to do anything for the team, and I think that's perfect for this team before they transition to Spencer Rattler. And then next we have Ohio State quarterback Tathan Martell. I'm only calling him Tathan from now on. He's transferring to Miami.
Never really liked the guy, you know. I don't know if you watched QB1. Just, he always rubbed me the wrong way. You know, this, like, whole, I don't know if you remember from the episode where he played, I believe, a team in Texas, and he, like, it was high school football, and the man had, like, a Nevada, like, he had the state of Nevada, like, over Texas on Twitter. Or it was, like, his aunt tweeted it, but he was the one who really did it. I mean, that kind of stuff. Like, he's always thought he was the best when he really wasn't. He's a running quarterback who isn't that fast.
I mean, that's definitely a problem for running quarterback, but I mean, he got out of a situation where he wasn't going to be the starting quarterback.
I mean, he had no future at the Ohio State University. I mean, and he's going to play on a loser team. You know, Miami obviously had that coaching change. Mark Richt left, and I think that it's not going to be pretty. I think maybe he'll play well, and he likes that because that's his personality, right? He just wants to be the man. And it's going to be – he's going to be happy, but the team's not going to be doing well.
And then next we have Brandon Wimbush to UCF. He was the Notre Dame QB before he got benched. And, I mean, that was a good move to bench him, but he's now going to a UCF team. I don't know. Is Mackenzie Milton
– I think – I don't know, actually, if Mackenzie Milton is coming back. But, you know, I don't think Mackenzie Milton will be able to come back
– after that injury.
Anyways. I mean, he'll come back, but it'll take a while. And even then, you know, Brandon Wimbush, solid backup. He's very good, actually. He, if you don't remember, Brandon Wimbush had a pretty good season last year. He was the one who actually led them to the win against Michigan. It wasn't Ian Book.
But, I mean, starting Ian Book was the right choice.
For sure.
But Brandon Wimbush is a talented quarterback. And, I mean, UCF, this is another year where they're going to be the best group of five team. And I like this move. It's a good match for them, and they're going to try and repeat what they've done the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of the best group of five dynasties. Now you have to say that. And I just wanted to close this section up by saying this is the new evolution of college football, right? Mm-hmm. All these star college football players are transferring, right? This is becoming more and more like the NBA, NFL, like a major football league in the sense that now there's a free agency. It's called the transfer season.
Right. And, I mean, Russell Wilson really kind of started it all.
I think his decision to go to Wisconsin is one of the biggest decisions in college football history.
Yeah, because not only did that, like, propel him into relative stardom, I mean, it let people know, hey, you can do this. You can go where you want.
And he really started the fifth-year movement.
Yeah.
And I think now
the graduate transfer,
the graduate movement, he started. But now there's the transfer of the backup quarterback on one of the top 10 teams in the nation, and you just want to get your playing time. Right.
Yeah, and I think that this is definitely what we'll be seeing for the next couple of years.
And I'm really happy because you know what, college football should be relevant all year.
Yeah, you gotta have a free agent in off season. And then now we will be going on to the NFL here on the Three and Out podcast. We are going to be starting off with a recap of the conference championship games, beginning with Rams 26, Saints 23 in the Superdome. This is a tainted victory.
I don't think so. If you can't win at home with this offense, that defense, you had all the talent in the world and you still couldn't get the job done in regulation. I mean, you're up 13-0 in the first quarter. You should have gone 2 touchdowns early, and you didn't. This is completely your fault. You throw a screen on first down because, you know, Sean Payton wants to be that little egotistic maniac that he is.
It was a slant, not a screen.
And he wants to show that he's the guy, and he comes up with all these amazing play calls. He's just an older version of Sean McVay, and it just didn't work. I mean...
here's the thing. I mean, you can blame the refs all you want. Yes, that should have been at least like one of four penalties called.
There could have been so many options.
But there was a lot of options.
But there was also a penalty on the other drive, like a PI on the Saints that they didn't call. Like that was also blatant.
Yeah, but that was the most blatant. That like even if it was called for PI, I was like, yeah, that's the most blatant PI I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, it's like Bird Box challenge now with coming in the NFL refs first NBA now NFL refs.
He checked him.
I mean, I know it's a really bad call, but like the great
they still
coaches,
lost the game.
Yeah, yeah, the great coaches still reflect
Breeze
on the entire game.
Interception in overtime.
You know,
that was not Breeze's fault.
You know what the most coaches say, especially in most sports like such as basketball, they're always like it's 5-on-7, right? You have to always assume that the refs are on the other side's team, and that's how you have to play. You can't blame the refs right. for your loss.
Well, yeah. I think it was worse, first of all, that he even threw the ball on third down. And that he threw the ball on first down. I mean, the Rams could have had no timeouts, like a minute left. Like, it would not have been a lot of time on the clock.
I personally don't have a problem with the first down slant play call. They run that play a lot. It's a little pick play. That's a catch. If Breeze throws a catchable pass, which he does 9 times out of 10.
Well, no, I think he saw that there was nowhere to go with that play, so he just threw it as low as he could.
No,
so.
he was trying to complete the pass.
It
was just bad clock management.
Okay, it was bad
combined
clock management.
Combined with the fact that there's that penalty, it was a tough game for the Saints. I mean, and if you look at the rest of the game, like the Rams really didn't do much. I mean,
right.
They scored, but their defense
had 5 touches.
Their defense was whatever. I mean, like I here's the thing. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the Super Bowl because the Patriots are known for getting rid of like stars like Aaron Donald and stuff like that.
And I think that this was a really poorly coached game from both sides. I mean, Sean McVay, as I said, he gave Todd Gurley 5 touches. Yeah, he wasn't playing great. He said he wasn't hurt, but that's a star running back.
He must have been
a conference champ.
He must have been.
He
had
to
be
hurt,
but still, 5 touches. C.J. Anderson got 16 carries, and like it was just it was a poorly coached game. Clock management on both sides was really lacking, especially with the Saints in that final drive. Like, even though I was saying I don't have a problem with that slant call. They still could have run it the next 2 plays. Could have tried anything. The drive on in overtime was awful.
Yeah, I mean, that terrible pick by Breeze. And also, look at this. How do you rush for 48 yards as one of the best running back duos
in the league? To be fair to them, Kamara did have almost 100 yards receiving on 10 catches. Their priority wasn't running it with him. It was more
getting them involved in the game, basically.
Right. But Ingram had 9 carries.
Or only, he averaged 3 yards a carry. I mean, that's just terrible.
Yeah, it was not a great game.
And, the NFL, right? We don't want to criticize Drew Brees because he's the perfect guy. I mean, he has to step up in this kind of game. He has to win this game. This is the perfect scenario. No excuses not to win this game. Mm-hmm. And you got to put some of the blame on him.
You do.
One interception, he didn't even throw for 300 yards at home in the dome.
He doesn't call plays, though.
The pick wasn't his fault, necessarily.
I mean, there's pressure on the pick. He was throwing to receivers. Like, he doesn't get to say, Sean, I'm just going to check down to a running play here.
When you have a normally good play-calling coach, quarterbacks don't do that. And I think a lot of the blame has to be on Sean Payton here for just not giving Breeze the right plays.
Well, if you've, like, we've all known Sean Payton, right? Sean Payton has a little bit of an ego, like, especially after the game, right? He was just insanely mad at the refs, right? Most good coaches.
I think that's fair.
I think
it's
you have
very
to,
fair.
I think you have to look at the entire game. The best coaches would reflect on the entire game.
But a penalty should not decide whether a team reaches the Super Bowl.
I'm not saying it's...
Sean Payton drew up a play that beat...
It worked.
Nickell Robey-Coleman down the sideline for a touchdown. Breeze put it in good position, and Robey-Coleman ran into him helmet to helmet and interfered with him.
I know it's a bad play, but you still have to put blame on the entire team. They should have still won the game.
They should have.
It's just tough to see the game being put in the ref's hands like that.
Yes, it is tough, but you have
to. You cannot get mad at Payton for taking out his frustrations there. Yeah, what is he going to do, yell at himself? Like,
it's a problem in the NFL. It's like there's no safety net. Like, what is the NFL supposed to do about non-calls? You know, they put a statement out that they probably don't want to make non-PI calls reviewable, so only PI calls. There has to be a safety net so this doesn't happen again. It's a bad look for the NFL, and they just put the Rams in the Super Bowl. The Los Angeles refs are in the Super Bowl, okay? I mean, it's sickening to New Orleans fans who got eliminated by the Stephon Diggs play last year, the Beast Quake.
Two back-to-back devastating losses for the Saints, and... It was, I mean, the Rams didn't really play that well. I mean, they didn't have a first down until the Hecker fake punt.
Okay, but I don't understand how you can't win the game when a team in the first half can't even hear themselves, right? They have to go to the coach about audibles. They have to go up and whisper
to
the wide receiver.
This has happened before. Like, I don't know why you're acting like it's such a crazy thing that they had a 13-point lead in the first quarter.
Like, I'm not saying that it's crazy.
They didn't score twice in the red zone. I mean, like, they didn't take advantage of their opportunities.
Exactly. That's all I'm asking for. You know, if this is Brady blowing the lead, you guys are freaking out and you're saying it's all his fault.
No, if that call happened to Brady, I would be freaking out about that call more than
yeah.
And then on to the next game, we have Patriots versus Chiefs. Patriots took this one also in overtime, 37-31. And Brady?
Well, you know what? I will never doubt Tom Brady again. Maybe. It was super disrespectful that we even had a GOAT conversation between him and Aaron Rodgers. I mean, this is one bad man.
I mean, even if you just look at him stats-wise, until... like the fourth quarter when he really kind of took over, he didn't have a good just looking at his stats, he did not have a great game. He had two picks. He should have had a third, but it got called back for the D forward. But there's just something about him that even when he doesn't play well, he's unstoppable.
I mean, listen, all you need to see is that final drive. Those final two drives.
Third and 10.
Every time
they're
going to throw a I don't get defenses. They're going to throw a crossing route to Edelman or Gronk every time.
What about when they throw it out of the backfield to White or to Hogan? He plays mind games with the defense. And when he sees something, you think, how does James White get open so much in the backfield? They're the best screen team in the league. They're the best third down team right now in the playoffs. Like, he finds ways to move the sticks. That's what the GOAT does.
And if you watch the game, you know, think about how many times they ran the screens and it just didn't work, right? And Belichick didn't scratch it away from his playbook. No, he saved it for later in the game. And what happened, it worked, right? They got 15 yards from a screen pass when all game had been not working. You know, they tried the little duck under screen. They tried every single sort of screen and it wasn't really working at the beginning of the game, but then they stored it for the end. And that's what Belichick does best. You will never know what he runs. And also, I just want to talk about one thing, and this is why the Patriots will never be top. Did you guys read the report that they were on the bus ride to the game? They got 8 new plays that they had to learn. The offense did. They all had to learn 8 new plays on the bus ride to the game.
I doubt that report, to be honest.
And 5 of those plays were run. No, it's the Gronk slant. The Gronk slant was introduced during the game.
Gronk has never run a slant before.
No, but the different combinations outside of the play. This is a real report.
Okay, I mean, maybe that's true, but I mean, we already see why the Patriots are great. And I think it was a great watching experience as well.
The thing with Brady is, like, he's a little bit like LeBron in that just when he decides to turn it on, there is no one that can stop him. Like, when he just flicks that switch, when it's the fourth quarter and he's down and he just decides to go on a drive, I don't think there's anyone.
I had zero doubt in my mind in that overtime that he was going to get stopped. Zero doubt in my mind. I mean,
the Chiefs, Mahomes didn't play well, and the Chiefs didn't play well.
That's a false statement. I know I've been a Mahomes hater all year, but the kid balled. I mean, he had 295 yards, three touchdowns. He actually had a higher passing rate.
His completion rating. Percentage was not
good. I don't know if you watched the first half, but did they score in the first half?
I'm saying in the second half.
Too late.
Tony Romo said it best. They are the Golden State Warriors of the NFL. They can just put up points like this. They were down by 14 in the first half, and they still...
Oh, but I thought we were getting mad when the Saints blew a 13-point lead in the first half. But
I mean,
the Patriots can blow a 13-point lead in the first half.
I mean, look at the final score. If you get the job done, I don't care how much of a lead you blow. If you get the job done, I'm fine with it. Then it's not a lead blow. And then there's
But the drive where they scored right going into half, you know, they kind of threw it up, and that was like the first time basically the whole game they got Tyreek Hill free, and that's what it was. I mean, you really saw it. Like Teddy Bruschi, former Patriot on ESPN, he said the Chiefs can win this game. I'm sorry, the Patriots can win this game if they limit the Chiefs' big plays.
And, they
and
did
that's
that.
What's they I did mean that. That, like you saw against the Colts, the Chiefs, you know, Tyreek Hill got loose.
If he had Tyreek one Hill, reception. He
if
had...
Tyreek Hill doesn't get loose, I mean, it's game over for the that just goes to show how valuable he is.
And
they need big plays.
And people don't remember this, but on the drive that Mahomes had to take the lead near the end of the game, J.C. Jackson had a wide open pick actually that he dropped.
He dropped it. It was right.
It was literally right to his hands. And I think it was a was it intended for
Tyreek?
It was
intended for Tyreek Hill in the end zone.
Right.
It was a bad
and I mean,
throw.
If he gets that pick also, I mean, this is like ball game.
By the way,
did you guys see the tweet? I know you retweeted it, right? It's like watch Mahomes get a torn ACL next year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not rooting for that obviously because that'd be sad. But like, you know, sometimes it happens a lot in the NFL where young players with a ton of talent can get hurt.
Remember RG3? That happened to RG3.
RG3 was supposed to be great. Vince Young, like players who are so promising in their rookie second years, just kind of fall off sometimes.
I mean, he really...
I don't expect him to have as good of a year.
As a Chargers fan, I'm hoping he falls off naturally due to natural causes.
natural causes.
I think if you're any NFL team, you're watching this game for inspiration on how to stop Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean,
I think if you take away Tyreek from him, I don't think he's half as good.
Well, I think there's going to come a point, right? If you read the Adam Schefter report, right? It's like they want to pay him $200 million or something insane like
he's
that.
He's going to have to keep up that production.
And you know what? You know who they have to get rid of either Tyreek or Kelce. Like, you can't keep all three
of
them.
Well, Kelce is almost 30, so...
And he's a tight end.
Yeah, and he already was signed to an extension.
And
so.
And Tyreek's going to want big money. So
they have a lot of cap because, I mean, who's signed on their team other than a few offensive linemen? Like, they have no one on the defense who signed to a big contract. Dee Ford is a free agent, though. I mean, I don't know if they'll want to re-sign him after that.
Yeah, they're not
going
to re-sign him
but
after
that. But he had a big sack season. He's still a great player. I don't care what happened
and
that
game.
And,
you know, I'm just looking at this box score. The fact that the Chiefs were in this game is mind-boggling. The Patriots had double the first downs, double the first
They had, like, one first
plays.
Down in the
and
first
that,
half
that's
or something
how,
crazy.
That is how... The Chiefs work.
They had doubled the time of possession.
That's how you beat Mahomes. You take the ball out of his hands.
Right. And I think that does it for our recap of the conference championship games. We will have a Super Bowl special coming to you next week. But for now, we're going to do a quick awards segment here. Starting off with the Offensive Rookie of the Year. It's between Saquon and Baker. I'm going with Baker here.
I mean, personally, you know, as a Patriots fan, I'd say Sonny Michel based off his playoff performances.
But I got to
go with Saquon here. I think he was clearly
just,
the better
just so you
out
know,
of
the playoffs are not.
I know. I just know that. I'm just saying as a fan.
Here's the thing.
Like
so it's Offensive Rookie of the Year, so it's Player of the Year. If it was Most Valuable Rookie of the Year, no question Baker Mayfield and what he's done with the Browns. But it's the best rookie, and the best rookie is Saquon Barkley. It's undeniable. He ran for 2,000 scrimmage
yards. 3,000
yards. 2,000 scrimmage yards behind a piss-poor offensive line.
Piss-poor.
Ooh.
I mean, and really, he put a ton of production up with not a lot around him to help him. I mean, it's not like they had a passing or anything. He's the most explosive player in the league, and he's basically the best athlete in the world.
I agree completely,
I will say,
with Alex. And I just wish Quentin Nelson could win because...
Yeah, me too. Honestly, though, he kind of deserves to be in that conversation. And I think I think it is kind of interesting, though, that the top two in the running are the 1 and 2 pick. You don't see that very often where it's...
Right, like, that draft class was kind of, like, clear.
Yeah.
Like, once they knew you were taking Baker, it was kind of like, wow. And everyone knew Barkley was the best player in the draft. It was just kind of a question of, like,
value.
How he'd fit in and the value and all that.
And then next we have Defensive Rookie of the Year. This is probably a three-man race. I think at this point it's two. You have Darius Leonard, linebacker for the Colts, and Derwin James, the safety for the Chargers. You guys know who I'm taking here. Derwin James was just all over the field for the Chargers. He did everything they asked of him. And I just think
He did a pretty good job on Gronk also. Like, he impressed me in that game, not going to lie.
He whatever they needed him to do, whether it was cover a tight end.
An all-pro tight end.
He shut down Kelce in the regular season. He was their leading sacker for the first couple of weeks of the season. He's gotten picks. He's a ball hawk. He played linebacker in the Ravens game. He did everything for them.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you've heard about Darius Leonard, but he's a rookie who led the league in tackles. I mean, that's really just ridiculous. I think it was around 143 tackles. I'm pretty sure 163. Excuse me. I mean, he was a leader, and he turned around this Colts defense. And I'm going to take Darius Leonard just because you just don't see that explosive of a linebacker come around that often.
You don't see that level of production rookie year. I think you have to take him.
Right. And as much as how great Derwin James has been for the Chargers, Darius Leonard was the best rookie this year. Like, he performed so well in the playoffs. He dominated the Texans game. And then he actually, forced and recovered a fumble in the Chiefs game. Even though they lost that game, his production should not be overshadowed.
One thing I will say, though, is that I think Derwin James is more talented. I think Darius Leonard should win. I think Derwin James will win. I just feel like the writers are more likely to vote for Derwin James. And then we have comeback player of the year. I think this one's cut and dry.
I think it's unanimous. Let's just go through. Andrew Luck.
JJ Watt. I mean, I think JJ Watt's production has been amazing, but no, I'm kidding. I'm going with Andrew Luck. I do think JJ Watt had a great season coming back.
Jason Verrett.
But Andrew Luck just basically had a dominant year. He had over 35 touchdown passes. The man was a monster. And, you know,
leading a team to the playoffs after starting 0-5.
Yeah, and 1-5. But 1-5. And, you know, his shoulder was demolished, and hopefully Cam Newton takes an Andrew Luck year like Andrew Luck did, because it really helped him. He's back to that MVP form.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he was in the MVP running, and he with a rookie coach and a staff, a mishmash of staff.
He has to win. I mean, the fact that he came from that kind of injury, you have to give it to him.
He didn't throw a football for over a year.
It's clear. And then we have defensive player of the year. This one is also, in my opinion, fairly cut and dry. It's Aaron Donald. I mean,
remember when it was Khalil Mack at the beginning of the season? Remember those good old days?
Aaron Donald had
over 20 sacks.
He had the most dominant defensive season I've ever seen. I wasn't allowed to see Lawrence Taylor or Bruce Smith or anyone like that. But if you just watch him play, he was unstoppable. There was nothing that teams could do to stop him. Most sacks ever for a defensive tackle. He was stuffing runs. He was doing everything for this Rams team, and he was just the best player on the field.
As you guys said, you know, he 20
led,
sacks.
To lead the league in sacks as a defensive tackle and to come.
And all those double teams, too, by the way. Yeah. I mean, he's a beast.
And, you know, he also had four forced fumbles. I mean, just a great year. This guy is by far the best defensive player in the NFL right now. I don't think anyone can really argue that. Like, he's the most valuable, and listen, defensive player of the year. This guy was almost in MVP conversations for a while.
Yeah.
And he has to, and it makes sense that he's the highest paid player
on the defensive side of the ball. Like, he's unstoppable. And then next we have coach of the year. This is a two-man race between, in my opinion, Frank Reich and Matt Nagy.
I got to go with Nagy just because, you know, as you guys said, constantly reminding me, this is a regular season reward. And one guy won his division, the other one didn't. I mean, Matt Nagy, I don't think anyone thought the Bears would win this division at the beginning of the year. And listen,
he led them to such explosive offense, though. I mean, it's just, you know, Trubisky had an amazing year.
I mean, to win with Trubisky playing like that.
Well, to win with that defense. I would go Frank Reich just because the Colts' offense has been amazing. And the way he, you know, brought that team back from 1-5 was definitely crazy. I mean, the way he developed this roster with all these young, inexperienced players was just amazing. And they're overachieving. He coached the best. I think Matt Nagy got carried by Vic Fangio.
I personally think that I mean, Vic Fangio definitely did help out Matt Nagy, but I think that talent-wise, this Bears offense is less talented than the Colts offense.
He has...
I mean, one guy is
Jordan
Andrew
Howard,
Luck over
Charles Leno, great left tackle. Costanzo's not
Luck
that good.
Luck is 10 times better than Trubisky. Hilton is by far the best receiver on either of those teams. I mean, you have
Allen Robinson's pretty good.
And he has All-Pro Quentin Nelson. You have
All-Pro Quentin Nelson. You have Ebron catching 30,000 touchdown passes. I mean, I think a little bit more credit on this this Colts team should go to Matt Eberflus.
Well, Ebron's been not that good. I mean, it just goes to show that Frank Reich is like bringing the best out of these players. I mean, he made a rookie guard first team all pro.
Everyone knew people were saying he was a Hall of Famer coming into the draft.
Like, I know, but you know, it's hard. Like, you can't just walk in the NFL and become a first team all pro.
But I think more credit should go to Matt Eberflus. Not more credit. I think there should be a lot of credit to Matt Eberflus. I mean, if you look at this defense, there's no one there.
Stepped it up.
And I think that what Matt Nagy did with this offense is more impressive than what Frank Reich did with that offense. Because they're both offensive coaches.
To win that. That's a tough division.
Aaron
Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers. The Vikings were overrated, but they were still a solid
team. Lions and Packers had a bad record, and the Vikings didn't even make the playoffs. Like, I'd say the Colts division was harder because their division
winner.
But
they didn't win it. They didn't win the division. Yeah. On to our final award. We're skipping Offensive Player of the Year because at this point, that's just MVP. There's no difference between those two anymore. MVP?
Patty Mahomes. I have to say it. You know, I've been criticizing him all year. So is Alex, but I have to go with him. The stats don't lie. Just off sheer numbers, the man has to win. 50 touchdowns. He revolutionized the quarterback position, and I think you have to give
revolutionized.
It to him.
That's like, a strong word.
Revolutionized is a strong word, but I think just we've never seen this level of explosiveness. And like
from a second-year quarterback, yeah.
No, I don't think we've seen this level of explosiveness offensively since the Brady Moss years. It's just an exciting. Like, I was talking to an Uber driver I had, and he's like, "Yeah, I wasn't really a football fan, and then I started watching the Chiefs, and I'm just like a big Chiefs fan now." So
that's a bandwagon,
right? But that's the thing.
Well, that's all sports need to have bandwagons. That's how you expand a business.
I just think that he is far and away the MVP. There's no one else in the conversation. I would love it to be Breeze, just for story and just because he's. I like him more than
what is it? The hair? Does the hair do it for you? Is that why you don't?
It's his voice.
It's his voice.
It's the voice.
Okay. A froggish voice.
I can't handle the voice. No, it's just I don't want to have to face him for 2 years, two games a year, forever. But just if you look at the stats he put up, he led best offense in the league, and he was just unstoppable. And he was fun, and he has highlights every week.
I mean, yeah, the no-look pass against the Ravens. He had a nice pass against...
He got too cute with that. He kept trying to do it a lot.
He played really well this year. He carries himself well. And I think that... Listen, he's the MVP just based off numbers alone. I mean, that's not even getting for the stuff outside of football that he's done for the game, like you said before.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely got to be him.
And final question before we stop talking about the MVP. Does Mahomes take a dip down next year, or does he take another level?
Of course, because teams know how to defend him now.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that at the end of the year.
Taking away Tyreek Hill.
So you think, like, do you even have the Chiefs winning the division next year?
Oh, of course. But I mean, it's going to be easy to win the division, because all those other teams are going to be in a major decline. I mean, Broncos are in kind of a rebuilding era. Oh, and yeah, Raiders are also rebuilding. You know, Chargers aren't in that great of a state. So, yeah, they'll probably win the division.
I think they'll win the division. I think it's going to be just as close as it was this year. I think it's going to come down to those divisional games between the Chargers and the Chiefs.
And I completely agree, and I'm going to say it right now. I expect Mahomes to be there in January at home in Kansas City. I think they might get the one seed again next year.
I don't think they will. I mean, I think it's going to be the Jaguars. I think they're going to have a bounce back year. Oh, I'm not kidding. But
Kyler Murray is their quarterback?
It'll be interesting to see. I think, all the other three AFC West teams will be fighting for that, 6-10 title. But yeah.
Yeah, and that is going to do it for our show today. Thank you all for listening. We will see you next week when we have our Super Bowl special. I'm Kyle Reams on behalf of Alex and Jadav. Have a good week.
See you guys next week.
Thank you.